Anne Frank once said, "How wonderful it is that nobody need wait a single moment before starting to improve the world." Welcome to episode 17 of Our Hen House, a place to find our way to change the world for animals. In today's episode, we will begin by talking about some strong new vegans, as well as some artistic ones. Speaking of strong vegans, joining us today is Paul Shapiro, Senior Director of the Humane Society of the United States' End Factory Farming Campaign. Paul will talk about everything from the latest from the Ohio Anti-Confinement Ballot Initiative to how he, a longtime vegan and animal rights activist, avoids activist burnout. In our news section, we will report on some animal news about Goldman Sachs and the implications it has for China. We will also share some Muy Bien news right from our hen house. Our second guest today will be Kelly Overton, Executive Director of People Protecting Animals and Their Habitats. Kelly is currently stationed on the Gulf of Mexico and is preparing to assist in efforts to rescue animals at risk because of the oil spill. We will hear Kelly's thoughts about British Petroleum, and he will let us know how we can help the situation down there right from our own homes. Finally, we will discuss the results of our Facebook survey, where we ask you to tell us your favorite quote. We are pleased as punch that you have joined us today in our hen house, where we still have not made the trip to our storage unit to trade our heavy winter sweaters for some message tees. We're hot. My name is Jasmine Singer, and I'll be your co-host today in our hen house, along with my favorite enchilada, Marianne Sullivan. Now please, pull up some hay. Let's get squawking. I'd like to welcome my co-host, Marianne Sullivan.
Hello, my little fajita.
Si.
We'll tell you why later. I am using a Mexican form of address.
How was your week, sweetie?
Oh, it was fine.
Do you know what's exciting?
Well, I know a few things that are exciting, but tell me which one you're thinking about.
Mike Tyson went vegan.
Yeah, that's not exciting. It's crazy.
It's completely insanity.
I don't know what to do with that information.
It's utter insanity. Do you think he'll come on our podcast? Do you think I could just Facebook him and ask him, or do you think that I have to go through his people?
I imagine you have to go through his people.
So that was pretty cool.
I think his people probably have people.
We have a new section of our website coming out soon called And They're Vegan, and Mike Tyson will certainly be among them. Basically, it's just that different social entrepreneurs, different activists, celebrities, people who are doing their thing and are vegan.
Yeah, not necessarily or not actually in that they would be doing it in animal rights in any way, just that they happen to be doing something of significance in some other area and happen to be vegan. Of course, Mike Tyson has that whole pigeon racing thing going on. He has a show on Animal Planet. He's very into the pigeons, and he seems to, you know, like, at least portray himself as really loving his pigeons.
Okay, well, we'll give him
but
a learning curve.
It's problematic. I mean, from what I've heard, it's problematic.
Another amazing vegan is Joy Askew.
Yeah, I can't wait till you're finished with your video. I have had the privilege of watching you put it together, and it's just turning out so amazing.
Joy Askew is going to be one of our first people featured in The Art of the Animal, which I'm excited about. And later this weekend, we're actually going to see the Go Vegan exhibit that we've spoken about before.
And blogged about.
The Go Vegan exhibit by Jonathan Horowitz, who's a wonderful artist. And he has an exhibit at a very popular new gallery here in this New York City that used to be a meatpacking plant, as we've mentioned. And we're going to be interviewing Jonathan Horowitz on video. So stay tuned to our website.
I'm so excited about
so
that.
So am I. I'm actually scared.
So excited. I'm very intimidated by artists.
No, me too. I never know what to say.
I never kind of know what it's all about. But I'm so, this is just going to be amazing. I've seen photographs of some parts of the exhibit, and just the juxtaposition of the photographs, and it's kind of a pop art kind of thing, I guess. And the space, which still looks very much like a butcher shop,
right? The original location of Mushu's used to be a butcher.
Really?
Mushu's, of course, being a vegan shoe store, used to be a butcher as well. And so, and we interviewed Moby this week, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're so cool. I'm so impressed
just
by us.
Stop. Stop. Just stop. Because if I were listening to us right now, I would turn us off. You know what, though, is annoying? And I kind of don't know how to say this because I'm definitely not trying to, like, badmouth anyone. I love very much our devoted listeners and readers and things like that. But on a personal level, when I look at the Google Analytics, like the back end, to see who's reacting to what.
Yeah, I don't understand the Google Analytics.
By far, it's so easy. You have never looked. By far, the biggest hits we get are when it's a celebrity or someone that we're featuring, as opposed to an activist thing where people can actually get involved and do something to create change. Like, if we put, you know, if we put up a celebrity thing, then it gets some, like, so many more hits than if we put up, like, a really cool opportunity for getting involved with volunteering. What is that?
Well, I think that's human nature. I mean, people just love celebrities. And, it, you know, I do, too. I always am drawn
no,
to articles
I do too.
About celebrities. And looking for things that to get involved with, it kind of depends on where you are. Some people are at a spot where they have some time and they're looking for an opportunity, and other people just are overwhelmed and don't want to think about the fact that there's one more thing that they could do because they can't find the
well,
time
that's
to do
partly
it.
What we're trying to do with our henhouse is try to create ways for people to get involved that don't necessarily go that far outside of their normal life, of what they're doing. There are ways to get involved while you're doing your work, while you could incorporate activism into absolutely anything that you're doing. And of course, there's a million ways to go well above and beyond that and get active for animals in ways that challenge your comfort zone or impact your life in a bigger way.
Yeah, but I think the idea of staying within your, not maybe your comfort zone, but within
your
daily life, that's an extremely valuable concept, because what we're trying to do here is mainstream. And what's more mainstream than your actual everyday activities?
For
sure. The more you can incorporate animals into just the everyday quotidian activities that you do, I think the better off we'll all be. That's what it's got to be all about. It's got to be part of all of our lives all the time.
Right.
There were some great opportunities that I noticed your poor little wiki activism.
I know,
post,
my wiki
just,
post.
You know, hardly got any likes at all. That's such a great idea.
The wiki
and something
post.
People really.
Well, say what it is for the people who don't know.
Well, I mean, everybody knows what Wikipedia is. And the fact is, of course, it's just updated by regular everyday people. And if you find a site, either pro-animal or anti-animal, that needs some correcting and improving, then you just do it. And you have to have, you can't be, you see, people who, like, are from an organization, they're not eligible to update the information.
Right.
It has to be a neutral source.
Actually, this idea came from Lisa Rimmer, who is one of my Facebook friends who did just that and emailed me to tell me, and I thought that was groovy. So that's just one example
that's
of what
totally
people
totally something
do.
People can do whenever they have some spare time.
But people like the celebrity stuff better, so that's one of the reasons why we're going to have the and their vegan section, because we want to manipulate people to get to our henhouse.org.
That's what we're all about.
Manipulation right here. Actually, we talked about this last week a little bit, but we are officially ourhenhouse.org. My email address is officially jasmine@ourhenhouse.org.
Now you got that working?
I got it working. I cried a little, but it was worth it.
Yeah, you were up nights.
I was up nights.
I didn't seem like it would be that complicated, but everything turns out to be complicated.
Everything in the world is complicated, totally. Paul Shapiro is our first guest on our show today.
I'm excited.
I realized there was no transition into that, but I just got excited.
Well, he's complicated.
He's a complicated
fella. That's what I've heard.
Right, he's a complicated guy. You know, during the Prop 2 campaign in California, I was out in California for a period of time while Paul was out there. Paul was out there without stopping, though, of course. He was out there
Paul
the
never
whole
seems
time.
To stop.
He doesn't stop. And we had such a nice time bonding there in, like, Southern California. We just had a great old time. Just,
he's so funny.
He's just
that understated sense of humor.
He's really been a big part of creating real big change. So,
yeah. I'm not sure I know of anybody who's done more.
Mm-mm. So let's get into talking to Paul Shapiro.
Senior Director of the End Factory Farming Campaign for the Humane Society of the United States, Paul Shapiro has played an integral role in numerous successful legislative and corporate campaigns to improve the plight of farm animals. Paul's work has helped enact farm animal protection laws in California, Arizona, Michigan, Maine, Colorado, and Oregon. He's also worked with dozens of companies, including some of the world's top retailers, to improve animal welfare in their supply chains. Paul founded Compassion Over Killing in 1995 and served as its campaign director until January 2005. While there, he worked as a farm animal cruelty investigator and led initiatives such as the successful effort to end the use of the misleading Animal Care Certified logo on battery cage egg cartons nationwide. Paul has been interviewed in hundreds of print, broadcast, and online news sources as an authority on farm animal welfare and animal advocacy. He has also published dozens of articles about animal welfare in publications ranging from daily newspapers to academic journals.
Welcome to our hen house, Paul Shapiro.
Thank you guys very much. And let me first start out by saying mad props to you guys for getting on CNN.com the other day for the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. That was awesome.
Thank you. That was really exciting for us. People were crawling out of the woodwork, contacting us. It was so awesome. Thank you so much. Yeah, if I'd been there, we would have been on the front page. What was that?
I have no doubt of that. I'm going to have a little chat with Anderson Cooper about this.
Seriously, you know? That would be, because that was not good enough. That was just not acceptable.
No.
It was very exciting. Yeah.
I'm going to be like, look, A-Dog, why are my peeps up on the homepage? And he'll be like, oh, you mean Marianne? Oh, I didn't realize that she was, oh, yeah, oh, no, next time, next year. So
yeah,
that'll be how it goes down for the vegan bake sale next year.
Can you work on the Ellen DeGeneres thing for us, too? Because, you know, we do have, like, the vegan lesbian club going on here. We'd like to, you know, feel some love from our own people.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that she was gay. I'm gonna have to change.
No,
much to the chagrin of many straight males. But anyway, yeah, I'll have a little chat with her too and see if I can get her at your next big sale.
So. I'd really appreciate
Thanks
that.
So
Thank
much,
you
Paul.
So much. So, Paul Shapiro, Marianne told me this morning that she thinks she met you when you were in high school.
Oh, that's cool. Maybe so.
I think
that was what, like 2 years ago?
So, Paul, our podcast listeners, they might already be a little familiar with what's going on in Ohio, both in terms of the current ballot initiative that's underway there now and the unfortunate issue, too, that was passed there last year. But we want to hear your point of view, because from your vantage point, you have been out at ground zero for some time now, as well as the other folks at HSUS. So, before we get into what's going on in Ohio now, can you tell us what happened in Ohio last year with issue two?
Yeah, sure. And just to back up even a little bit before that, I mean, you know, 10 years ago, there were no states that had banned any of the standard factory farming practices that are abusive to animals. And then you started seeing through ballot measures and action in state legislatures, various states criminalizing certain confinement practices. Florida banned gestation crates, Arizona banned veal crates and gestation crates, California banned veal crates, gestation crates, and battery cages. And then you start seeing, as well, legislatures like in Oregon, Colorado, Michigan, and Maine outlawing some or all of these three extremely cruel and inhumane practices. And what happened in Ohio was that rather than look at some of these reforms that admittedly are quite modest, but they do reduce a lot of suffering and move the ball forward for farm animals in a way that is precedent-setting, the Ohio agribusiness lobby wanted to avert the type of progress that we're seeing in other states. And so they directed their friends in the legislature to put a measure on the ballot that sounded very seductive. I mean, if you guys would have read the language on this ballot, you'd vote for it. It sounds so good. Mm-hmm. They talked about creating a board of experts to ensure the humane treatment of farm animals, improve food safety, provide access to safe local food. I mean, it was basically like everything aside from apple pie and mandating that the Buckeyes win every game. I mean, it was really a very seductive language. And so two-thirds of Ohio voters enacted that board and amended the state's constitution to create a new board that is largely industry-dominated. Most of the people on this board are folks who are very closely tied with the agribusiness industry. And so the purpose of the board, from the agribusiness lobby's point of view, really was to avert reform. So what we're doing now is ensuring that this board has some much-needed direction from the voters, and we're now gathering signatures in Ohio to put a measure on this November's ballot that would not repeal the board. I mean, this is not a countermeasure to what was called Issue 2 in the last election cycle. Rather, this would allow Ohio voters a chance to provide some direction to the board regarding a very narrow standard, and it would address basically the treatment of farm animals in the state, laying out a couple things. First and foremost, it would say essentially that battery cages, veal crates, and gestation crates would have to be banned. And in addition to that, it would also prohibit the transport of downer cows. These cows are too sick or injured even to stand and walk on their own to their own slaughter. It would prohibit the transport of those cows to slaughter. And then finally, in a much-needed part of this ballot measure, it would require that you can't strangle farm animals to death, and that any method of euthanasia for sick and injured animals on the farm would have to be done in a way that was not painful for the animals. So, for example, in a rural county called Wayne County, you guys may have seen that documentary called Death on a Factory Farm that HBO did.
Yeah, absolutely.
What happened was that at this gestation crate using factory farm, they were euthanizing sick and injured pigs, not by instantly rendering them unconscious or dead, but instead they were taking chains, wrapping them around their necks, and hanging them from the front of tractors. Okay. And if you watch the hidden camera footage of what was going on at this factory farm, these pigs are writhing in the air for minutes on end before they finally give up and die. Amazingly, the case actually went to court, and they were charged with criminal cruelty, but on the hangings, they were acquitted because the judge ruled that in Ohio, there is no law that prevents anybody from strangling these animals to death. And in fact, it would be nice to think that the agribusiness industry distanced itself from this type of cruelty, but instead, they raised thousands of dollars for the legal defense of this defendant. And the spokesperson for the Ohio Pork Producers Council, when the acquittal came in, called that decision, and I quote, a huge victory. Yeah. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I think that it's about time that it's Ohio's animals and not their abusers who are the ones to have a huge victory, and that's exactly what we're trying to do with this ballot measure.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Paul. So what would you suggest that people who are listening can do to help this effort, whether they're in Ohio or elsewhere? We really got to get this passed. Are you looking for rebirth volunteers or just people in Ohio?
Well, you're absolutely right that we really do need to get this passed. But before we can give Ohio voters a chance to vote on this on November 2nd, we need to get enough signatures to put this on the ballot. So if you live in Ohio, absolutely, we would love for you to volunteer your time to collect signatures to help put this on the ballot. Mm-hmm. We already have well over 100,000 Ohioans who have signed petitions to put this on the ballot, but we need over 600,000 signatures. So we still need 500,000 more signatures to get this on the ballot. Even folks outside of Ohio can help by forwarding the website around, becoming a fan of Ohioans for Humane Farms on Facebook, letting, if you have any friends or family within the state, know about the campaign, and certainly donating as well. These campaigns, our opponents will be relying heavily on their fundraising efforts from across the nation. In fact, their ballot measure to create this board relied heavily on out-of-state corporate donations from many of the largest agribusinesses in the nation. And our strategy is one of relying on on a grassroots network of supporters, people who care about animal welfare, people who care about food safety, people who care about the environment and so on, from both in Ohio and throughout the nation who want to contribute to help pass this measure. Because really, for the next half a year or so, Ohio is going to be the central front in this national debate about factory farming, and it's imperative that, again, it's the animals and not their abusers who end up prevailing.
Absolutely. We couldn't agree with that more. It's just exciting to see all of the awareness that's being raised as a result of these anti-confinement measures happening. Paul, a lot of other states are passing the same kind of law that Issue 2 passed. Do you see this as a trend, and do you see any way to deal with it? Do you see any possibility for lawsuits?
Well, I don't know about that last point. I think it'll depend on each circumstance. At the same time, you know, this board, we don't really view it as a poisonous package, so to speak. I mean, it's really just an empty package. It basically offers the promise of regulation when in reality it will end up most likely codifying the status quo or not meaningfully changing it that much anyway. So I'm not sure that farm animals are necessarily worse off. I mean, we're still doing a ballot measure in Ohio, for example. We could have done one before, now we can still do one now. But I do think that it raises concern because we don't want to give people the false assurance that animal welfare concerns are being met, when in reality these boards tend to produce just the opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a reason why these boards are supported by the farm bureaus and the large agribusiness corporations and are opposed by the animal welfare groups and the environmental groups and so on. And that's because they offer really a false hope of some type of reform. So I do think that it's a concern, and these boards have been defeated in some states. For example, in Idaho, an effort in the legislature to create such a board failed. And then in other cases, the boards sometimes are merely advisory. They're not actually granted the power to promulgate mandatory regulations. And so they really vary from state to state on the level of concern I would think it brings. But I think probably the best way to handle this is to demonstrate that in the state that started this, in Ohio, that while the intent of the agribusiness folks was to prevent reform, then in a way it really provoked it. Because if you look at what's happening, their desire to avert the ballot initiative really provoked one. And
yeah.
So we'll have to see what happens.
I totally agree. I think it's kind of, in a way, a step forward that they feel that they have to create this illusion of somebody being in charge, when before they just thought they could comfortably ignore the whole situation and hide it. And they kind of know now that they have to put a smokescreen up. I was encouraged by an editorial I saw not too long ago in the Toledo Blade, which it wasn't referring to the new ballot initiative. It was just talking about, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with it, battery cages, and how this new board that they're putting in should do something about that and address the problem of battery cages. It's just the whole fact now that somebody's in charge and somebody can be held accountable. And perhaps even aside from passing new laws, as the next ballot initiative is going to do, there'll just be possibilities of holding these boards accountable if we can raise enough public notice.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a really good point, and it demonstrates that the animal movement is becoming more of a threat to standard industry practices within the world of factory farming. I mean, you're right. If you look at, you know, 5-10 years ago, the industry didn't really think that it needed to do anything like this because there wasn't a significant threat there. Now they're realizing that because so many states are banning many of their standard industry practices, that they actually do need to adopt some type of a strategy. Unfortunately for animals, the strategy they seem to be adopting is not to do what most Americans want them to do, which is to reform their practices, but is instead to come up with these smoke and mirror type policy changes, which really don't change policy much at all, but rather just give the appearance of regulation. But I think that as more and more Americans continue to learn about the ways in which farm animals are so routinely abused, the call for reform will continue to get greater. And no matter how many of these boards get set up, you can't ignore the fact that many of these standard industry practices, like battery cages and veal crates and gestation crates, are so extreme that they really are out of step with mainstream American sentiments about how animals ought to be treated. And that is an Achilles heel for the industry, the fact that several of its standard practices are just so far out of step with how Americans expect animals should be treated, that it presents an important opportunity for us to gain real progress for farm animals.
I'm thinking beyond Ohio. Do you have any plans to finally go to the federal level rather than state by state to help farm animals?
Well, Bill Clinton always said that you should never think about your next election because you might not make it through this one. But while we are of course very focused on getting on the ballot right now in Ohio and then winning in November if we're fortunate enough to gain access to the ballot, I do think that the Congress does need to act. Regardless of what happens in Ohio or not. Now, there's a bill that's currently pending that's sponsored by Congresspeople Elton Gallagher and Diane Watson, a Republican and Democrat, respectively, both from California, that would essentially say that for any animal products that the federal government procures, that they can't come from battery cages, veal crates, or gestation crates. And that's surprisingly a lot of animal products. I mean, you think about the National School Lunch Program, the military's use of animal products, the federal prison system. It's a lot of products there. And so while it's a federal procurement bill, it wouldn't be a mandate on all producers. It's a good bill. It's called the Prevention of Farm Animal Cruelty Act. It's pending in the current Congress right now. And it has a lot of co-sponsors, both Republican and Democrat, but whether or not that is going to pass right now or not, I think we'll have to wait and see. But those are the type of bills that the Congress ought to be considering to help move the industry away from some of the very most abusive practices that it employs.
We love what you're doing so much. We follow all of the awesome media that you get, Paul, and that the Humane Society gets.
A lot of it seems to be generated, of course, by the dark side. They're so afraid of you, they're now mentioning you in their articles.
Yeah, and some of those are great quotables, too.
Thanks, well, that's kind of you. Yeah, you know, we joke about how obsessed they are with us. It's like having like a fatal attraction to us. they just can't break up with us. I don't know.
It's true.
Well, they're really trying hard.
They are. So I heard that you got started with animal advocacy when you were, I don't know, like in preschool or something like that. What got you started, and has it always been about farm animals specifically?
It wasn't preschool. It was kindergarten. I started Kindergartners for Calves. I just made that up. But I have always been interested in for children for chickens. By the way, this is the problem with coming up with stand-up comedy on a live show here. But you know, I've always cared a lot about animals. Growing up, my mom was with our county humane society. We always had dogs, and I always cared about them very much. I mean, they were members of our family. They weren't, you know, just pets who were left outside or anything all the time. I mean, I slept with them, and I mean, I'd say that many times I would say that I considered my dogs more loved than my brother at the time. So, but, you know, my love for animals really stopped with dogs until I was about 13, when I realized that other animals aside from dogs were also capable of experiencing happiness and joy and, of course, suffering and pain. When I started watching videos of what was going on inside of factory farms and inside of slaughter plants, and I was absolutely horrified. I thought I would never allow that type of cruelty to befall my dogs, but I realized that there was nothing special about my dogs aside from the fact that I had a bond with them. And if I didn't want that to happen to my dogs, why would I want it happening to any animal? And so I started getting involved in the animal advocacy movement and volunteering and interning at various organizations. And we didn't have any club in my high school, and so on these issues, and so I started a club that I called Compassion Over Killing, and it of course eventually grew into something much larger than a high school club, and I ended up, after 6 years of it being an all-volunteer organization from 1995 through 2001, we got enough money to hire somebody, and I was, of course, being as nepotistic as I am, hired myself. then eventually also hired Mian Park and Josh Balk and Carter Dillard, and worked there full-time for about 4 years doing a lot of undercover investigations, exposés of slaughter plants, factory farms, livestock auctions, transport trailers, and so on. And then went over to the Humane Society of the United States in January of 2005 to create a factory farming campaign there, and have been doing that for the last 5+ years now. And it's been a very good run. I've been very pleased with the progress that we've been able to forge for farm animals, both in terms of making them a greater priority for the animal movement as a whole, as well as actually getting real concrete progress, I mean, actually tangible steps forward for farm animals and things that I've, you know, could have only dreamt of doing in past years, like banning battery cages in in states like California and Michigan and so on. And so it's a real privilege and an honor to get a chance to be involved in this work. And I'm also humbled to be able to wage these campaigns with people who I consider to be some of the best advocates for animals in the entire movement, both who are employed at HSUS and are allies at other organizations that are helping wage these campaigns as well. So it's great to be able to do it. I absolutely love it, and I can't think of a job in the world that I would get more meaning from.
Well, you've certainly been a great asset to HSUS as well. You've been doing remarkable work there. What kind of advice would you have for someone who might be listening, who's vegan, who cares about animals, and just doesn't really know what kind of advocacy they should pursue? And as you know, I hope you know, our hen house is just all about trying to find the right things for people to do that suit them.
Mm-hmm.
What would your suggestions be? If you're not in Ohio,
well,
we know what your suggestion is if you're in Ohio.
Yeah, pick up a petition and get some damn signatures. No, well, first of all, to that person, I would tell them that they're already doing quite a lot by being vegan. Of course, that's an effective way to help reduce animal suffering. It's something that I've been doing for the last 17 years as a vegan, and I think it's, of course, an effective tool. So that's the first thing that I would say. And then after that, I think that it's imperative that we look not only at our own diets, but that we look to the rest of the world, and that we look at making a truly humane society, or at least a more humane society, by helping those who are around us in our lives make better choices. For example, you know, a friend of mine who she's vegan, but most of her coworkers aren't, she will regularly bring in a vegan lunch for everybody for free and allow them to taste it and see how great it is, and kind of dispel some of these myths that people have about vegan eating. And that's one great positive way that people have a good friendly association with veganism. First of all, who doesn't like free food? But second of all, it also helps demonstrate to people that it's not such a foreign concept. It doesn't involve deprivation and self-sacrifice. It's really quite, you know, a fun, enjoyable lifestyle. So that's one way. Of course, there are many great organizations like Mercy for Animals and Vegan Outreach and Compassion Over Killing that do a lot of leafleting, just going out into the street and being friendly and passing out literature about animal issues to folks so that they can get informed about it. I think that's really great. I'm a big proponent of advertising and funding ad campaigns to help people understand animal issues a little bit better. And there are a lot of groups that are doing that now, but I think that the animal movement as a whole isn't doing enough of it. There's a reason why all of the largest companies in the world advertise, because it actually is effective at changing behavior. And admittedly, we're not trying to get people to switch from Coke to Pepsi. I mean, we're trying to create real and lasting social change. But I do think that paid advertising is an important component in doing that. Not that every group needs to be doing it, but I do think it's an important component that the movement has underutilized. I think the concept of feed-ins, not only at the workplace, but just out in the general public, is a really great one. And, of course, if you're in a state or a city or a county that allows for citizen initiatives to think about some of the ways that we might be able to engage in the direct democratic process. You know, for example, while these statewide campaigns certainly require millions of dollars to wage in a, if you're interested in actually winning, there are less expensive ways of doing ballot measures that aren't statewide. If you look, for example, at the last election in Tucson, they banned greyhound racing, essentially. They cracked down on greyhound racing, I should say, through a citywide vote. Other times, folks put a countywide measure on the ballot, and these are things that can happen at the grassroots level. So those are just a few of the ideas that I think people can and should engage in. But the most important thing is just not to get complacent, not to let ourselves fall into the thinking that, oh, I've changed my diet, that's the only thing that I need to do. That's an important thing to do, but by becoming advocates, we can do so much more.
Yeah, I'm giving a speech at the Let Live Animal Rights Conference in about a month and a half, and I think I'm just going to play that part of what you said, because that was definitely really well said. I think everyone should start their day listening to that. So what is one hobby or interest that you have that has absolutely nothing to do with animals?
I think about nothing but helping alleviate the suffering of animals. No, I'm just kidding. you know, I feed the hungry and clothe the poor. you know, I have to say that I am kind of like an avid weightlifter. And so I end up lifting weights maybe like 4 or 5 times a week. I am absolutely in love with my cats. I know that is still animal related, but I love playing with my cats. And in fact, earlier today had them out on leash, which they, mm-hmm. I don't let them out on their own, but they go out on leash and they have a good time. Mm-hmm. And I love drinking smoothies. That's like, you know, another pastime. It actually goes quite well with weightlifting because you can drink them right afterwards, and mm-hmm. it's like a, you know, a nice like 1-2 punch. And I realize that this is not something that's that common in the world of at least from what I found in the world of vegan advocacy. But I'm a big football fan as well, and I not only enjoy watching, but I used to enjoy playing before I had a career-ending injury. So I was, I was going to be on the Washington Redskins, but unfortunately this knee injury prevented me from getting drafted by them.
Wow.
You know, people, you know, I was like a perfect fit for them, you know, but unfortunately.
Well, it's too bad. You missed that calling.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's good to hear actually about the weightlifting and the smoothie drinking, because you're such a longtime animal activist, and it's interesting to hear what you do in your off time. It to me sounds like you're taking really good care of yourself physically and mentally and spending your time with animals as well. And that is such a key part of avoiding burnout. So that you're a perfect example of that, I think.
Oh, thanks. I hope so. I certainly hope so. And I guess it's something that I'm saddened to see so many folks who have been involved in the animal movement who end up doing just what you're saying. You know, they're burning out for a variety of reasons. Sometimes because they make it all too all consuming, or other times because they might move to a new place where they're not hanging out with other animal advocates, and they don't like the social pressure of being different from all of their new friends and so on. But it's a real concern of mine. I mean, if everybody who has ever been a part of the animal movement were still a part of it today, we'd be a much more formidable force, that's for sure.
That sure is true. And I think people burn out just because they sometimes they just get so overwhelmed
And they jump into it too much. I mean, we have to be in this for long distance, not for the sprint.
Yeah.
And you have to have other interests, and you have to watch your football games and enjoy life. Yeah,
I'm with you, and I think, you know, one of the reasons also I think some people burn out is, and just to kind of go off what you're saying, is that people will feel so overwhelmed by the magnitude of the suffering that animals are enduring. I mean, billions and billions of animals who are experiencing such nightmarish existences that we can hardly even contemplate them. And then these folks don't see progress being made, and so they may just throw up their hands and say, well, yeah, it's horrible, but I'm just one person. The movement isn't making much progress. But I think if you look at what the movement is doing now compared to 10, 15, or even 20 years ago, we are making way more progress than we've ever made before. And I think this conversation has been illustrative of that, some of the things that we've been discussing, especially on the farm animal issue, but on other issues too, where we are making real tangible progress, not just in changing public opinions and attitudes, but on actually banning some of the worst things that we do to other animals.
Yeah, absolutely. When I used to do this, like, years ago, the farm animal industry was just a solid wall that you could not see behind. They'd never responded to anything. They never reacted to anything. They just totally ignored the animal protection movement. It's totally and completely changed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, we used to be on the right side of this debate about factory farming, but now we really find ourselves not just on the right side, we find ourselves on the winning side as well.
Yeah.
And I think that that is a change, at least on the farm animal issue, from a decade or so ago. And that, to me, is one of the most inspirational aspects of being involved in this that I think helps prevent against burnout, is recognizing that we are winning, and that animals are better off as a result of the work that we are doing, and were we not doing it, they would be worse off. So for me, you know, the thing that helps me keep on going more than anything is looking at the progress that's being made and wanting to make even more.
And as you said before, the fact that the industry is basically based on a lie and a secret that the American public still really has not come to terms with, that it's so far out of tune with people's values. And so it's very vulnerable.
Yeah.
And I think that the work that you've been doing has really been amazing and has really made those changes start happening. They could start happening at a much more rapid rate.
Yeah, thank you so much, Paul, for joining us today in our hen house. We could talk to you for hours and hours, obviously. We'll just have to plan that. We'll have to do that while we're watching football and drinking smoothies and playing with your cats. At some point,
right, well, then,
okay. We'll watch Paul weightlift, you know. We're like lesbians. Then, we never watch men weightlift. Maybe this will enlighten us.
Is that what straight women do? We sit around and watch men weightlift. I was unaware of that.
I don't know either. So we'll have Ellen DeGeneres come and join us. I'm sure she would enjoy that as well.
Yeah, if she's there, I'm there.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much, Paul.
Hey, thank you guys so much. It's an honor to be on, and I hope that we get a chance to do it again sometime. And the two times that the Giants and Redskins are playing each other this year, we'll have to make sure we're together for at least one of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks, Paul.
I'm inspired. How about you?
Constantly. Constantly. Yeah, I love that he's so funny, too.
I know. Paul has a great sense of humor.
We actually... Every time I talk to him.
A little biting with there.
But it's so dry, too.
I know. Sometimes you're not entirely sure whether it was a joke or not.
All right. Imagine Paul as a little kid. He must have drove his parents completely insane. He was probably, like, you know, reading the New York Times and making, like, witty jokes about, like, Ronald Reagan or whatever it was. I don't know. Ronald Reagan. Remember him?
Vaguely. I tried to block him out.
That was a highlight of our hen house. And I think let's just... get right into some...
Yeah, and if you're out in Ohio, get to work. You're carrying the banner for all of us.
And if you're not in Ohio, get to work. Let's get into some news now, shall we?
Great.
Some animal news about, surprisingly, Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, I was reading this article by our friend, Mia McDonald, Huffington Post article, and it's so disturbing. I mean, as everyone knows, Goldman Sachs has been the subject of congressional investigations because of their underhanded
behavior in the financial crisis and the gazillions of dollars we all gave them. But Mia's writing about something that just, you know, you just want to kill yourself sometimes. They own all these factory farms, chicken farms in China, of all places. And apparently, I mean, if you want to think about it, if we gave Goldman Sachs money and Goldman Sachs is buying chicken farms, that means we bought some chicken farms. And Mia points out, I mean, all these really important factors that are involved in the growth of factory farming in China and other countries where people are starting to move from being really poor to having a better income. And unfortunately, one of the side effects of that is that they're eating a lot more animal products. And I thought one of the most really staggering facts in this article is that China, which used to be an exporter of soy, is now an importer of soy. And they are importing soy, and you know where that soy is being grown?
Mm.
In Brazil. Yeah, in the rainforest.
Yeah.
Or what used to be the rainforest.
I think
it's being cut down to grow soybeans, to send to China, to feed to chickens.
It's
like,
unbelievable.
What's wrong with the world?
And then people are, like, talking about everything that's wrong with soy, and they're eating their meat.
I know.
They're saying that's why they can't go vegan, because soy production is unethical. Well, guess where the soy is being grown for, you schmucks.
Yeah, it's really the whole, like, the situation when you think about what's going on in the United States is so bad, and then when you go worldwide, it just seems so overwhelming.
Mia is doing a research project on the meat production in China and in Indonesia as well, I think.
Well, a bunch of different countries around the world, and she's been working on a number of really serious research reports. She's an amazing woman.
Unbelievable.
She's really, really smart. She really knows her stuff, and she's very interested in the international aspects of factory farming from an environmental perspective, but with an animal rights heart. Which is rare indeed.
She's kind of one of a kind. I actually think
really
that's
is.
Too bad. There really should be many more Mia McDonalds in the world, though.
You know, I was talking in my class about the conflicts between the environmental movement and the animal rights movement, and my students were really shocked. They really didn't know about that. Hmm. And one of the students asked me afterwards, she said, is there any group that does both? Why isn't there? And I thought, no. Like, I couldn't believe it when I thought about it. I mean, of course, there are the small groups. Like, Mia certainly is one with Brighter Green. And Marisa Miller-Wolfson, who's been on our podcast.
We basically mention Marisa in every episode.
Yeah, Kind Green Planet. But talking about the major environmental groups, no, there isn't one. It is astounding.
Well, you know, I just had this article in Veg News magazine last month about ecotourism. And in the process of writing the article, I was talking with these environmental organizations, like the Rainforest Alliance, for example, who are one of the go-to organizations for issues about the environment, and they don't mention the connection to animal products anywhere on their website. And so I asked them, are you going to have some kind of position statement on this? And they kept avoiding the question and responding to everything else in the email but that. And I'd ask it again and again, and finally the woman I was speaking with on the email said, I'm CCing my boss and she can answer you. And the response was no, because there's plenty of other organizations working on it. We're not even going to have a position statement about the importance of consuming a plant-based diet or the detrimental effect that animal food production has on our planet.
Yeah, it's really,
because there's other groups working on
that's it. That's crazy. That's just craziness.
So that was in the news. I encourage everyone to check that out on Mia McDonald's Huffington Post blog.
Such a timely twist on the story that Goldman Sachs ends up being so involved just when Goldman Sachs is well, sort of on the ropes because they're being the subject of these congressional investigations. Mm-hmm. But chances are they're going to come out of it just fine, and owning their huge factory farms in China, which are polluting at an unbelievable rate and causing unbelievable suffering.
cheery news. But let's get to the good news.
Isn't it funny? The second week in a row.
Bad news, good news.
Do you know that my mom thinks I'm famous?
Yeah, well, you are, sort of, in a way. Vegan famous. And now you're vegan famous in Mexico.
Except for it's not a vegan magazine in Mexico. It's actually a magazine featuring Tom York and me.
Well, you're both vegans.
That's true. We are. That is true. No, the what was the name of the magazine? Vente, Trece, Cuatro, Cinco.
Well, the overall website is Reporte Indigo.
Reporte Indigo.
And the part you're talking about is kind of the pop culture section of it, and I believe it's pronounced
Trente.
I have no idea how it's pronounced. I don't know why.
Trece Vente.
Trece Vente. Anyway, it means 1320. I don't know why
it's called that. But it's unbelievable.
It's the best website I've ever seen. And too. I can't even understand anything it says because I, sadly, pathetically, don't speak Spanish.
Even more pathetically, I took, like, I don't know, 5 years of Spanish and can only say, my name is Jasmine and I like to act. Want to hear it?
That is...
Me llamo Yasmin. I say Yasmin. Me gusta actuar.
That was very.
That was all my five impressive. Years of Spanish.
But anyway, getting back to the there's this huge feature on you on this website.
It's crazy.
Huge.
They found me because of my tattoos.
I don't even understand the whole thing.
I talk all about my vegan activism and my tattoos.
It's a great article. I mean, somebody translated it for us. And it's just right on.
I don't even actually really know what to say because I'm kind of shocked and confused. I don't really... and Rose is thrilled.
Rose is so excited about it.
It's called Activismo a Flor de Piel, which means something like activism down to her skin or something like that. It's pretty exciting. So, I mean, do you think that this is newsworthy for our podcast?
Well, it's our podcast.
That's true, it is. You can read
Rose
the translation.
Newsworthy.
We put the translation on our Facebook page in a comment. Under the article. So if anyone's interested in reading it, they can there. Or they could read it in Spanish on Report...
If they're smarter than we are.
What was the name of the
Reporte Indigo. www.reporte, R-E-P-O-R-T-E, Indigo.
Right. And there's .com. And then you could click on the magazine Trece Vente from there and read it. So...
It's so exciting.
It's totally exciting. And that was our news.
Next, we have a very special guest, Kelly Overton, who runs the organization PATH, which is People Protecting Animals and Their Habitats. And you can find PATH online at ppath.org. Kelly has recently gone down to the Gulf of Mexico to assist with rescue efforts for the tragic oil spill that is about to plague the entire Gulf and results in the loss of a significant amount of fauna and flora. It is just going to be absolutely tragic loss to our wildlife population. And Kelly has gone down there, as he did after Hurricane Katrina, to see what he can do as far as protecting the animals. And our hen house is going to be following Kelly as he makes his way through the Gulf of Mexico and does his part to help animals. We have already blogged about it. We have a list of supplies that people can donate. We have a list of places that are taking drop-off donations, and we have an address where people can donate money as well, which go directly to the rescue efforts that PATH is currently spearheading. And as I said, we're going to be talking to Kelly on a consistent basis starting today on our podcast. Kelly Overton is the founder and board chair of People Protecting Animals and Their Habitats. Kelly has 15 years experience managing progressive nonprofit organizations. He has a broad academic background and has received a BA in Human Services Management from the University of Massachusetts Boston, an MPH in International Health and Development from Tulane University School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine in New Orleans, a graduate certificate in conservation biology from Columbia University's Center for Environmental Research and Conservation, and MPA from Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Kelly lives in New York City.
Welcome to our hen house, Kelly Overton. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning.
And where are you at the moment?
I'm in Foley, Alabama.
Foley, Alabama. Is that down on the coast?
It's about 5 miles north of Gulf Shores, which is on the Alabama-Florida line, on my way to Louisiana later after this phone call.
And Kelly, you are the executive director of PATH, People Protecting Animals and Their Habitats. And you also were down in New Orleans to do animal rescue after Hurricane Katrina, is that right?
Yes, we were.
As soon as you heard about this oil spill, did you just sort of pick up and decide you had no choice but to go down there and help out as much as you can?
Yes, and I think a lot of the impetus to jump to just get moving on this was really from lessons learned after Katrina, both in helping animals and helping people. That, you know, there's just so much preparedness and details are needed. And once the disaster hits, be it a natural disaster, or in this case, a man-made corporate disaster, then you're too busy to think of the details. So we're trying to get it prepared.
I know you've only been down there a couple of days. Tell us what you've found since you've been poking around down there, trying to find ways to be useful.
Well, I think that, you know, the first thing, the most important, and the questions I'm getting from people back in New York or from people all over the country is, how do they help, or how do they come down and help with the animal? So there's you know, two ways of helping. You can certainly help in your community, and that may be, at this point, more important. And then here I'm finding that it's, you know, like any disaster, any unplanned event, it's very confusing as far as how people can help. You know, I'm hearing mostly people want to work with cleaning wildlife. British Petroleum is working with Fish and Wildlife, and they are, at this point, contracting people to claim wildlife. They're not accepting any volunteers. They're not allowing people any access to the areas that wildlife, at this point, has been affected.
Mm.
So there's plenty of information out there as far as in the local papers, websites, and TV stations down here, be it Mobile, Pensacola, New Orleans, about how to volunteer. But once you start that process, becomes very confusing. Usually you're given a telephone number that leads you back to British Petroleum, and that number gives you some information about how to volunteer locally. But I think we're sorting out how to really help and who's going to be allowed to help.
What is the role of the big groups? How are they becoming active in helping people volunteer?
I think we're all, the big groups, the small groups, the grassroots groups, are all trying to do the same thing right now. You know, we're all trying to find out, you know, from the state agencies, from Fish and Wildlife, and from British Petroleum, how we can help. And, you know, at this point, we're being, you know, kind of discouraged from doing that. I think that, you know, common sense, most of the groups, most people down here understand that this is an emergency that's going to, sadly, probably be beyond the scope of the wildlife rescue that BP and Fish and Wildlife is planning at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are going, we're moving forward and we're having supplies sent down and we're communicating and we're finding out who the local groups are and starting a dialogue with them and asking them what they need. Also, at this point, just communicating with, you know, this is an example, being able to tell you and your readers and your listeners what exactly is going on and what to expect and how to help.
So do you have fears, given the strong activity of BP and this whole volunteer effort, or not lack of volunteer effort, that there'll be a cover-up?
I don't, you know, I'm not, I, you know, my intent when I came down, and it certainly remains the same, is to, I don't care about the politics, I don't care about, you know, the who does what or who gets credit for what. You know, I came down to kind of assist, and we came down, there's a number of us down here now, just truly do anything we can to help the animal. I think once we get here and we see how frustrating it is or how discombobulated the information is, then you start to wonder. So I don't know if I use the word cover up. It's certainly in BP's best interest to be able to control who has access to volunteering and to cleaning up and to seeing the wildlife and seeing the devastation. I mean, that goes without saying. And at this point, it appears that they've been able to do that, and they are able to do that. And those effects are, you know, the birds are out there, and the marine mammals are out there, and it is already happened, and it happens every day, another 210,000 gallons. But at this point, because it hasn't made land, I think he's been able to kind of tightly, you know, hold on to the public perception of how bad this really is. So I'll leave it at that.
When is the best estimate at this point when it is going to hit land? We keep hearing it is, and it doesn't.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm certainly not a, you know, not an expert on ocean tides and weather and such, but, you know, there's some great graphics and you can find online. One was with CNN that shows daily where the oil's gone, and, you know, it'll blow up close to the Mississippi coast for a few days, and then the wind changes, and then it shifts back down to Louisiana. So, you know, I know in the last 2 days, Brisbane National Wildlife Refuge and the Candelaria Island were covered in oil in Louisiana. So it has started to, you know, come ashore. These are, you know, very near the shore of the continental state. But we really don't know. I think what's important to remember is the oil continues to increase every day. And, it, you know, it looks more and more like this is not going to be one community or one state. This is going to be a large portion of the Gulf of Mexico, the beaches and the habitat that are affected by this in our oil.
Well, it's just tragic. So if people want to get involved right now, which I'm sure everyone who's listening will want to help in whatever way they can, they should refer to the blog that we posted, Kelly, that says the supplies that are needed, and there are different drop-off sites throughout the country and also some addresses to send supplies to and donations to that go directly to the rescue efforts that you are doing. And yeah, it's important to also mention that PATH is a 100% volunteer organization, so there's no overhead on that.
Yes, I mean, all, you know, any donations, all supplies will go directly to helping animals or supporting the local organizations here on the ground that have been here for decades working in the estuaries or, you know, wildlife sanctuaries. So there's, at PATH, there's no salaries and there's no administrative costs, no advertising.
And are you still looking for people in their own communities to develop their own drop-off locations for supplies?
We are, and that's one of the things people could do that would be most helpful, is kind of get organized locally, find a way to collect these supplies that are needed, which are sometimes very specific eating pets, water picks, and, you know, get them in one spot and then get them down to us. And we have a central mailing address down the Gulf in Pensacola, Florida, where everything can be sent to. And then as this develops, we will get these supplies out to the communities most in need.
Wonderful. And that information, again, is available on ourhenhouse.org. And we'll link to that blog entry again in the blog entry that corresponds with this podcast so that people can find it easily. And Kelly, we're going to continue to talk to you on a consistent basis. You're going to let us know if there's anything else people could do to help. And we look forward to hearing your stories about what you're experiencing as you're down there helping out with the rescue efforts for this completely tragic oil spill. So please do keep us posted and let us know whatever you need from anyone, really. And we really are very appreciative that you're down there and doing what so many of us wish that we were doing right now, getting involved hands-on.
Well, thank you. Thank you for, you know, helping share what's going on down here with your readers and your listeners, and thank you for all you do.
So we did another Facebook survey.
Yeah, this one got an amazing number of results.
I really enjoyed this one. We asked people to mention their very favorite quote.
And we got over 60 quotes to choose from. It really was a very popular survey.
It was also really beautiful. I really enjoyed reading what everybody chose as their favorite. And really, who the hell are we to decide which of those are better than others? We actually want to read all of the quotes because they're that good. But since this episode is already way too long, we have narrowed it down to about 5 that we really loved. But we hope that you go to my Facebook page.
Yeah, my choices were actually kind of, I just picked some kind of randomly. The ones that are up there are just as good as the ones I picked. Right. And of course, there was the amazing Anne Frank one that started the show.
I love that quote.
I did too. And there's the "Be the change you wish to see in the world," which I wear all the time on a necklace around my neck. But
yeah, from Gandhi. But didn't you just kind of sneak that in?
Yeah, those are not part of the five that we chose.
All right, let's get to it. My first is from Aldous Huxley. "The truth does not cease to exist because it is ignored."
That is true. It does not. This one is, you could try and guess who said this. "Unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better." It's not.
Well, I know who it was. It was Dr. Seuss.
In The Lorax.
One of my favorites. "But for the sake of some little mouthful of flesh, we deprive a soul of the sun and light, and of that proportion of life and time it had been born to enjoy." From Plutarch.
That is unbelievable. I love that one too. "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." Martin Luther King. We actually couldn't decide between what Martin Luther King quote to say. We had a lot.
Everything he said was just so perfectly said. There were some of his favorite quotes that we didn't even get,
right?
Which we'll have to wait for our next survey. All right, this is one of, I had never heard this before, and I just had to put it in. "I have no race prejudices, no color prejudices, or caste prejudices, nor creed prejudices. All that I care to know is that a man is a human being. That is enough for me. He can't be any worse." From the unbelievably clever Mark Twain, a great animal rights activist of his time, I might add.
Well, that is the absolute perfect way to end our human-hating podcast. I'm just kidding. We don't hate humans, though we do hate a lot of them, but not you. Present company excluded, of course. And we are off to Puerto Rico, which is appropriate given the Spanishness of our week.
Yeah, I am so excited. I've never been there. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to spend most of the time there in meetings, but hopefully we'll get a little bit of touring around and seeing the sights in.
And we're going to be doing our podcast from Puerto Rico next week. I also,
however, we will be doing it in English since that's the only language we speak.
So I might say me gusta actuar again next week. And we also,
over and over, they're going to be sick of hearing that in Puerto Rico.
And I'm going to bring my little flip cam with me, and I'm going to try and do some videos while I'm out there, like maybe a vegan tour of San Juan would be pretty groovy, I thought. So that's basically all we got today. Visit our website, ourhenhouse.org. Visit our Facebook page and become our Facebook liker. Can't get used to that. And email us at info@ourhenhouse.org if you're interested in talking to us, which we hope you are. And if you like what you are listening to and you're listening on iTunes, please leave a friendly review and a rating. That's all I got today. You got anything else?
I'm done. I'm out.
Okay. All right, then. Peace.